Welcome to ASME TechCast, bringing you the innovators, the innovations, and the issues that push the envelope of engineering. Hello, this is Jeffrey Winters, Editor-in-Chief at Mechanical Engineering Magazine. In this episode of the podcast, I'm joined by my colleagues John Casawatz and Carlos Gonzalez, and we're here to talk about the 2020 Mechanical Engineering Magazine Emerging Technology Awards. John, Carlos, welcome.
Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's COVID time, right? So we're all kind of like working barefoot, right? So the Emerging Technology Awards, for those in podcast land, are an annual spotlight on innovations and innovators. In years past, we've looked at technologies in fields of clean energy, robotics, advanced manufacturing, biotechnology, and pressure technology. But as we started looking at candidate technologies this year, we started seeing a pattern. The technologies that were making a real difference this year were all focused on one specific, pretty obvious task: fighting the coronavirus. There's a line from Ralph Waldo Emerson about a foolish consistency being the hobgoblin of little minds, and, you know, around here, them's fighting words. So we set aside our five categories for just this year, and have used our Emerging Technology Awards as a way to spotlight the engineering response to COVID-19. The five technologies that we are spotlighting this year represent the breadth and depth of how engineers have responded to this global challenge. Some of these are products that have been on the market, but have seen their rationale magnified by the unique circumstances of the pandemic. Others were developed quickly in direct reaction to the events that as they unfolded this year. Each one of them will have a value to society even after the pandemic has subsided and we return to normal, whatever that means anymore. So let's kick off this year's discussion with Carlos Gonzalez, who will tell us about a robot that runs around and actually kills the coronavirus. Carlos, what's the story here?
Thanks, Jeff. So when the COVID-19 pandemic broke out in China earlier this year, several hospitals from the region started looking for solutions to disinfect and sterilize their environments. The problem is, right, how can you disinfect a room without placing people in danger? The solution turns out to be using autonomous robots. UVD Robots was one of the first companies to introduce an autonomous UVC disinfection robots back in 2014. The company was already one of the leading suppliers in this category, mainly in Europe. But since the pandemic, their business has tripled worldwide. UVC light, for those not familiar with it, is a manual disinfection process that's been around for more than 10 years. The novel idea with UVD robots is integrating it with an intelligent and autonomous robot. UVC light works by penetrating the cell membranes of a bacteria or virus. It then destroys the DNA and RNA structures of any microorganism, stopping it from reproduction, basically sterilizing the environment. UVC light is effective to up to 99.99% of all bacteria and all virus eliminated. The challenge with UVC light is proximity. You have to be about 1 meter away from any surface for it to work appropriately. This is why UVD robots exist in taking an autonomous robot, placing it in a room, and letting it map out its surrounding environment and applying UVC light to any surface it detects. By using these robots, UVD robots has been able to disinfect hospitals and also surgery operating theaters. And their business now, because of COVID-19, has expanded. They're being found in hotels, in large plant facilities, and even warehouses.
Carlos, that's pretty good. I mean, we know about like ultraviolet light from, you know, being bad for people. You know, there's the ultraviolet index during the summertime. Is this the kind of light that would be safe for humans to be around, or is this also bad for people?
So the UVC light that's being used by UVD robots is harmful to people. So the robot has safety measures in place that can detect when people are in the room to ensure that it's only being used in an empty environment.
So Carlos, the UVC process has been known to kill pathogens for more than 10 years, but these were, I guess, the first people to integrate the technology into a robot. Well, why did it take so long?
Honestly, I think it's more about the technology of robotics and where we are. You know, artificial intelligence and machine learning is one of the most advancing technologies in our current decade. And I think the capability of using a robot that's connected to the cloud with IoT capabilities, advanced sensors, is now finally becoming fully integrated. The idea of mobile autonomous robots is becoming more commonplace. So this idea of taking an existing technology like UVC light disinfection and pairing it with a developing emerging technology like autonomous robots is really the happy marriage of what we're seeing right now.
Thanks, Carlos. This is pretty good stuff. Next, I'd like to tell everyone about a different kind of robot, one that helps fight COVID-19 by reducing the amount of face-to-face interaction we need to get food. This robot is created by Starship Technologies, which was founded in Estonia by two founders of Skype back in 2014. And they saw a need for automated delivery vehicles as a sort of a perfect implementation of the self-driving autonomous vehicles that people have been trying to use in for on the road and different things for a long time. Perfecting fully automated self-driving vehicles is a difficult challenge, but the founders of Starship Technologies figured that if you could scale back the ambition in terms of speed, size, navigation, and obstacle avoidance, you could roll out the technology much faster. We're still waiting for autonomous vehicles to be roadworthy, just go out without any driver. These guys, Starship Technologies, has a robot now that can do the job. It's kind of an interesting looking device. It looks like an oversized picnic cooler. It's got six wheels. You put the groceries or food delivery in it, seal it up, and put in the coordinates, and it will go and find that location. It's got a map of the neighborhood, and it will roll on sidewalks using LiDAR and other sorts of detection technologies to figure out whether there are people or other obstacles in the way and figuring out autonomously how to avoid them. Their first implementation was in college campuses, or it was sort of seen as a fun way to get food to students from the dining hall. However, due to the pandemic, it's been rolled out in some other circumstances. Particularly, there's a market in Northern Washington, D.C. that uses these autonomous vehicles to deliver groceries in a couple mile radius. It's a pretty slick technology. It's something that will probably survive, you know, post-pandemic as a means of delivering not just food, but probably about anything from during that last mile of delivery that's always the most difficult.
Jeff, how is it with traversing obstacles, potholes, cracked concrete, whatever it might be, tree roots, things like that?
Right. Initially, before they even implement the robotic delivery vehicles, they do a map of the neighborhood. And so they figure out where the sidewalks are, where the curb cuts are, looking for all sorts of different kinds of potential obstacles that are fixed. Then it uses cameras, ultrasonic sensors, GPS to detect any sort of transient obstacles, either people, dogs, down branches, things like that. When it sees that, then it has to recompute a route to get to the other side. So it won't just be sitting there trying to go back and forth. It's smart enough to know that it needs to back up and try an alternate route.
So Jeff, I have a question about the products it's delivering. Is the robot able to temperature control anything? Let's say if you have something that's hot or cold, can it regulate that?
Not actively, but the compartment is insulated. So if you put hot food in there, it will keep the food hot.
So good enough for my Domino's.
You are going to be set. And as far as I can tell, you don't have to actually tip the delivery robot, but that might be something that they implement later on. One of the issues that has struck me, at least, over the course of this pandemic is the incompatibility between workplaces and disease control. I mean, if you work in an office building, you know that too often the HVAC systems prioritize for temperature control or airflow. And during cold and flu season, they just seem to be spread around virus-carrying particles into every cubicle. John Kosowatz is here to tell us about an innovation that can intercept these particles and also COVID particles and sterilize them. John, tell us how that works.
That's right, Jeff. And not only for office situations, but you can take this and put it into hotels, cooling systems, heating systems that go into individual rooms, or in a school building, for instance, or any office building for that matter. So what it is a filter. It's an HVAC filter for heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems. And it can now come in various sizes, and it kills the coronavirus. It is made of foam nickel, and it's got a heating element in there that heats the space in there in the filter up to about 200 degrees centigrade. That is enough to kill the coronavirus to 99.8% efficiency. It's also been proven to kill anthrax to 99.9% efficiency. And although it wasn't tested for Legionnaires' disease, it's assumed that it would work with Legionnaires' disease also because of its efficiency with anthrax spores. It was developed by a lot of people, but the original idea and operating system came from a fellow by the name of Manzer Hirani, who is the CEO of Medistar Corp down in Houston. They're a medical real estate development firm. And he is an engineer. He worked with a host of other noted researchers from Texas A&M University, the Texas Center for Superconductivity, and then they did testing of the device at the Galveston National Laboratory. So it has got quite a pedigree behind it. They spent millions of dollars in developing this, and it has been installed already at a couple of school districts in the state of Texas, as well as the Houston Intercontinental Hotel and the convention center down there also. So this gives some comfort to people who have to work outside of the home where you're in a bubble.
So John, you described it as a filter. It's got metal foam. Does it trap the particles and then heats them up? Walk me through a little bit more on the
sure. Yeah, it does. That's exactly what it does. Nickel foam does have its advantages, but it does have low resistivity. So that was something that had to be worked on. It was hard to raise the temperature high enough and quickly enough to kill the virus, but the researchers got around that by folding the foam and connecting multiple compartments with electrical wires, and that increased the resistance enough to raise the temperature as high as 250 degrees centigrade. It's basically HEPA filter technology on steroids. HEPA filters are very efficient, but they don't kill viruses or particles. And these operate in much the same way, but they take it the next step further and they zap the bugs.
So one question I have, John, is what does it take to install one of these filters? Is it a lot of installation required on the building's part, or can it easily be swapped with an existing system?
They average about 4 foot by 4 foot, but again, they can be custom fitted to the system at hand. And it's inexpensive to operate. Researchers say that the heat may increase heating and cooling costs by 1 to 2%.
Thank you, John. Another way to stop viruses from spreading throughout workplaces is to just keep the sick workers out. Office buildings have instituted in-lobby screenings to check the vital signs of anyone attempting to enter, but frankly, it's a time-consuming process, and it places security personnel and even the people waiting in line to get checked at risk. A company in New Hampshire is now marketing a solution that automates the process and speeds it up significantly. The company is called Advanced Kiosk, and it was quite literally founded in a garage several years ago, 20 years ago, in fact. The company makes all sorts of different types of kiosks, informational kiosks, directional kiosks. When the coronavirus hit, they realized that the basic kiosk technology could be upgraded and implemented to serve the sort of gatekeeping function. They knew that the technology had been developed originally in South Korea and in China for integrating temperature sensors and facial recognition sensors into the kiosk technology. And they'll be the first to tell you, Advanced Kiosk did not develop this technology. What they did do, however, is they adapted it to the existing kiosks that they use. They also rewrote the software to the standards that North American companies expect. And within a matter of weeks, they went from a concept to having a product ready to offer to its customers. The way it works is you approach the kiosk. It recognizes that you have a face. It uses an infrared temperature sensor to check your temperature immediately. It also checks to see whether you're wearing a mask or not. If your temperature is low enough, if you're wearing a mask, you are allowed to enter. If neither of those factors is in place, then you'll be denied. It's pretty straightforward. However, it's something that can be done much more quickly than a temperature check done with security personnel. As Jeff LeBlanc, the director of user experience at Advanced Kiosk, told me, if it takes 30 seconds to take someone's temperature and you've got 100 people or 200 people trying to get into a space, it could take an hour to clear that line. In this way, because the temperature checks are done almost instantaneously, the line can move much more quickly and you can get people through the lobby and into the office building, or in fact, as he pointed out, movie theaters, concert halls, any place where you have people trying to enter a space and you want to make sure that only people who are healthy get in.
That sounds great, Jeff. I do have a question about how many people can it scan within an hour or so? Like, can it handle a high influx of people?
My understanding is that it can be done within a matter of 5 to 10 seconds.
How did they manage to push it out so quickly, Jeff?
Again, some of this technology was pre-existing. The advanced kiosk folks, they didn't have to invent it, but they did find places in Asia that were already offering this sort of technology for the local market. They were able to contact a software provider that they had worked with before, and they were able to just bring it all together, you know, just from off-the-shelf parts. Again, it's not invention so much, but it certainly is engineering at its best if you think about taking and optimizing existing systems. It's very cool stuff. Finally, the engineering response to COVID-19 has extended beyond products that could be marketed. In fact, engineers around the world have used their tools and know-how to fill in the gaps in personal protective equipment during the earliest days of the pandemic. One of the companies that made that possible was Prusa Research in the Czech Republic. Carlos, what did they do and how did they empower engineers and technologists around the world?
Thank you, Jeff. So one of the things that was a huge problem, especially at the very beginning of the pandemic, was the lack of PPE, personal protective equipment. A lot of healthcare workers were dealing with shortages of N95 masks. And Joseph Prusa, he's the CEO and founder of Prusa Research out of the Czech Republic, decided to produce face shields with both 3D printed and laser cut plastic components. So himself and his engineering team designed, prototyped, and verified a mass production of medical appropriate face shields. Within just 3 days of taking on this endeavor, they had built a dozen prototypes and had went through 2 verifications with the Czech Ministry of Health. The novel thing and probably the amazing thing of this story is that Prusa took this design and made it open source. They made it available worldwide so that anyone could download it for free and manufacture and 3D print their own face shields. So thousands of people visited the website and started downloading this plan to 3D print their own face shield. Overall, it was downloaded over 250,000 times within a span of a few months. This face shield has been used by several healthcare frontline workers, doctors, nurses, and since March, they've been constantly improving the design and keeping it free for anybody to use.
That's cool. Now, Prusa Research is a pre-existing company. Was it a company that's been involved with open source hardware before, or was it just something that they saw as an opportunity?
From my understanding, I think that they saw an opportunity to help. They took their local initiative and they wanted to protect and provide some sort of help to all the doctors and firefighters and police officers, social workers. This has been used by anybody dealing with COVID on the front line. So I really think that they saw the humanitarian effort, the time of crisis that was going on, and they decided to just do something about it.
The thing that I find impressive about this is that this is an example of what one person can do to impact so many. As the CEO of his own firm, and it's not a big firm either, he was able to produce very good equipment, qualified equipment available to people around the world. That's more of a statement than a question, but efforts like this should not go unrewarded.
No, it's true. I mean, in an emergency like we've had this year, it's all hands on deck, right? And whereas it's great that companies have been able to find a market for their products, that they've been able to use capitalism and use the market forces to drive innovation, it's also great that people have just sort of volunteered their own efforts to create things. Because I think, Carlos, and correct me if I'm wrong, people have been producing these face shields, not necessarily for their own good, but to produce them and then donate them to local hospitals and first responders.
Yes. And I think if the engineering marvel that's here is where 3D printing as an industry has led us to. So the entire 3D printing community kind of got behind this effort. They shared the design. It even has qualified protection status. It has protection class 3, meeting the standard in Europe for health and safety. So the fact that 3D printing as a technology is so democratized that right now that anyone can go take this design and print it themselves really speaks volumes of where we are with 3D printing as a technology.
Thank you, Carlos. That was very well put. Everyone, that does it for now. ASME and Mechanical Engineering Magazine would like to extend its congratulations to UVD Robotics and Blue Ocean Robotics, Starship Technologies, Metastar Corporation, Advanced Kiosks, and Prusa Research, and to the literally hundreds and thousands of other companies and engineers who have responded to the COVID-19 crisis by implementing engineering solutions. You can read about the 2020 Mechanical Engineering Magazine Emerging Technology Awards and the engineering response to COVID in the December-January issue of Mechanical Engineering Magazine or online at asme.org. For John Kosowatz and Carlos Gonzalez, I'm Jeffrey Winters. Thank you for listening and have a great rest of your day.